WPR also offers its Ideas Network on 90.7 WHAD. Talk shows about Wisconsin issues as well as those facing our nation and the world.
This is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is about credit monitoring services, whether or not they're worth it, some file management tools, privacy topics, and then some security topics. So let's start off with the big matzo ball topic of whether or not credit monitoring services are actually worth it. There is quite a lot of data out there now that you can find if you're interested in this topic. I'm going to publish a link to an article from 2014 that I find is still accurate. And it's really probably the best article I've ever seen published on this particular topic. So I do highly encourage you to check it out. And included along with that, I'm including a link to a website that is the official place where you can go and sign up for opting out of credit and insurance offers from the official credit reporting bureaus. So they actually have a website where they collaborate together to say, okay, if you want to opt out of anything associated with their services, then go ahead and go there to that website. And the reports I've read say that if you do sign up on that website, then that can actually have a pretty positive impact for you with regards to preventing identity theft, because it effectively prevents offers coming to you in the mail for a new credit card and such, things like that, which then if somebody was able to get their hands on that, then they could fill out that documentation as if they were you and then send that in and potentially be opening an account using your credit and actually getting the card sent to a different address. So also, you may recall all the times that you've received those checks in the mail that are basically like, you know, I mean, here's a check, right? Write it out to be whatever you want. And then that's just going to go onto your credit card balance. So this opt-out thing will also prevent you from getting stupid checks like that in the mail, which I think are just atrocious. Because, again, what if somebody intercepts your mail? Or what if your mail is misdelivered? You do not need somebody going out there and, you know, buying many thousands of dollars worth of stuff on a check that was sent in the mail, and that's just going to end up getting billed to you. So getting deeper into this whole topic of credit monitoring services, and typically we find these credit monitoring services are being offered as a free service to individuals who have been notified that they are a victim of a data breach. And should you sign up for that? By and large, the opinion that, well, the security professionals, and certainly my opinion as well, is that by and large, that's a pointless waste of time. And the reason it's a pointless waste of time is because it doesn't do anything other than very, very high level monitoring. And it's only an after the fact sort of thing. There's no proactive measure. There's no preventative measures associated with that. So, I mean, if you like wasting your time, go for it. It's better than nothing. But the reality is that you're better off to actually have a paid service. So in all the circumstances where you're offered free credit monitoring, that is probably not going to be an effective option. However, if you absolutely refuse to pay for a real service, then sure, Free credit monitoring is better than no credit monitoring. Now, always keep in mind that you can get at least one Three Bureau credit report for free on an annual basis because that is law. However, you have to be extremely careful about what website you're ordering that through. And that will not show you the credit scores. So the reality is if you're actually interested in knowing what your credit scores are, as well as having regular access rather than just once every 12 months, then you need to be paying for a service. Now, one of the articles that I'm linking is an article by Brian Krebs, which I think is actually extremely well done, and there are quite a lot of comments by people who visit his website, and those comments have a lot of value in reading as well. So if you are a victim of identity theft, or if you're really serious about this topic, definitely check out that article and even read through the comments that various people have posted on that website, because there's a lot to be learned there. And so in terms of a proactive measure, something that I found rather fascinating was this aspect of what they call a security freeze. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't find a lot of information about that yet. I'm going to do some more investigation later. However, I think you all know there is a fraud alert option that you can place on your credit report with each one of the three credit reporting bureaus. Unfortunately, this actually has to be done individually with each one of the credit reporting bureaus. There seems to be no effective way of getting the freeze put in place on all three credit reporting bureaus. And even though I've read several places, supposedly it's supposed to be law that if you put a freeze in place, like a credit, that's what they call it, a credit freeze. If you put that on one provider, like if you talk to TransUnion and you put that freeze in place with them, supposedly they are going to inform the other credit reporting bureaus. However, in practice, I've been reading a lot where that doesn't really happen. So if you're serious about protecting yourself, you not only have to have proactive credit monitoring and credit freezes, but there is an extra element that's called the security freeze, and I'm going to try and find out more information about that. But what I've read so far is that the security freeze is really the end-all be-all solution from the perspective that it's truly a permanent lifetime proactive lock. And what it's supposed to do is that no one can actually open an account in your name unless the whoever it was who was trying to open the account has actually contacted you, and the unlock will only be in effect for 15 minutes and then it closes. So I'm going to do some more investigation into that because that sounds rather interesting. So please do check out the optoutprescreen.com website, which is the website where you can opt out of credit and insurance offers. That seems to be very effective. Something else I'll mention is that if you do subscribe to an official credit monitoring freeze system service provided by a company such as TransUnion, Experian, or Equifax, then you can have 24-hour-a-day access. Now, usually, this is a pretty expensive service. It's like $20 a month. I mean, it's not cheap. And what you have to look at is, what's the value of your time? Now, for a lot of working professionals, they're going to find that that's a valuable service, and that typically once every 30 days, you can get a brand new Three Bureau credit report. So with that, you could keep track of what's going on a rolling every 30-day basis. Now, it should be noted that credit freezes and security freezes have limits. What they are never going to be able to do is to stop somebody like an illegal immigrant from using your identity to go get a job. And, you know, so you have to be looking at your credit report to find out if there's new employment garbage being set up on there. I have found even if you co-sign for a loan with somebody, then their address information will show up on your credit report. So, you know, you need to be aware of the fact that anytime, whether it's legitimate or illegitimate, anytime somebody is applying for credit using either your information or you're actually legitimately a cosigner on something, whatever the information is that's associated with that application, that is going to appear on your credit report. So you need to be extremely cautious about these things because, so let's say a criminal has gotten your information and they go out there and simply apply for credit using your identity. And let's say they get denied. The fact still remains that whatever that garbage is, so that fake information, you know, some other address other than your legit address, that's now going to appear on your credit report. Now, you've got to do battle to get that off. And it's going to be a battle. You're going to spend a lot of time dealing with that. So this whole approach of being extremely proactive about not having your information out there is really where the game is at. I have gotten to the point where I'm just really, you know, I'd rather just have a very limited number of companies that I deal with, and I'll just pay cash for stuff, you know, or I'll just buy things outright. I generally just don't do anything in credit because there's all of these issues, and you look at it, you know, you see all these deals where, oh, sign up for such and such, you know, credit account with us, and what is the ramifications of doing that? So you think you're actually getting a discount, but in reality, two things are happening. Number one, your personally identifiable information is getting into, yet again, another database where somebody is probably not adequately securing that database of information, and it's probably going to get compromised, and the data will be leaked. So there's another broadening of the attack surface of the opportunities under which your personally identifiable information, so your identity, is going to get stolen and used for nefarious things, which will adversely impact your real existence. So that's one aspect of it. But the other thing is that if there is, well, I should say when there actually is an issue, this is going to suck up mass quantities of your time to deal with it, to if you can ever even get it corrected. And what was that discount's value is the question I have to ask you. You know, so you really have to think about, oh, you think you're getting a discount. In reality, you're not. So I look at a lot of these places where, you know, like customer loyalty programs, we'll give you a 10% discount on all purchases and whatever. I have to look at it and say, well, what are they doing in order to actually secure that information? And the vast majority of times, I'd just rather pay more because at least I know what the cost profile of that is. I can control the cost profile of paying more at time of procurement. What I have no control over is the cost profile of criminals destroying my life by stealing my identity and doing horrible things with it. You know, you can't control the cost profile of that. That could be several hundred hours of your life or more. Over a period of how many months? And what other adverse impacts does it have? So seriously give that some thought as you are contemplating whether or not you're going to give out your personally identifiable information. So my next tip for you is about an excellent file management tool. It is called TreeSize, and it's made by a company called Jam Software. I've actually been using this product for years. I think it is, bar none, the best file management tool on the market. And it's very, very reliable, extremely cost-effective, even whether you're like a home user or if you are an administrator of a file server for a business. I would strongly suggest that you get this product. So in the case of the file server, you install it on the file server itself, and then as the administrator, you run reports on, you know, old files, large files, duplicate files, and literally whatever sort of idea you can come up with to filter and search for particular types of files. This tool will not only produce fantastic reports, but it's just incredibly flexible. And a lot of people have problems with accumulating and accumulating and accumulating data and not getting rid of it. So they keep paying for more and more and more storage. Years ago, I worked with a lady who had a marketing business, and she just kept accumulating stuff. And instead of spending a day going through her old garbage, she just kept throwing more money at the problem, because the more data she accumulated, she had to buy larger hard drives, had to pay more in cloud backup solutions, and she had to pay more in consulting services with every sort of migration that happened as she went from one computer to another. You know, the whole thing was just, it was just stupid. You know, and she thought that throwing more money at this on an ongoing, continual basis was a better choice than just, you know, buying a software package to actually help her go through the data and say, well, you know that stuff from 15 years ago? I really don't need that anymore. The other thing is, why do you need duplicate files? I mean, that's an easy thing. Or if you feel like you might have a lot of large files, or you want to know what large files you do have so that you can go through and analyze those for, boy, should I really be keeping those, or do I need those anymore? So this is really the same sort of thing as email management. There are filters in your email system as well that will help you find large email, old email. You're typically not going to have duplicate email, although it is possible. But all of this electronic stuff that we have, you need to be very vigilant and proactive and regular in your approaches of managing that. And I find that most people are not very good at this approach. So I've worked with probably 10,000 people over the years now with regards to these things. I mean, it's just been an enormous amount of people. And what I found is that if you can give them a nice report on a regular basis that helps them say, okay, yeah, these are my files that I'm responsible for, and here's this report. I'm just going to spend a half an hour once a month looking at this report and seeing if there's anything in there that I should delete. Then people generally tend to take action on that. So if you're a file server administrator, you can actually set up these reports. And so one of the things that I've done in the past is say, here's the marketing folder, set up this report for certain types of files to be evaluated for a process of, you know, elimination, and send that to the manager of the marketing department, have them analyze it. In a lot of cases, I found where they start to just have some visibility and cognizance over what's happening in the file set that they're responsible for. And these people become part of the solution. So instead of your user base as an administrator, instead of your user base really being the problem and you having to go in and clean up the mess after them, this is a way to involve them in the managing their own data, which is, of course, what I think probably everybody would really want to manage their own data rather than having somebody else manage it for them. All right, so enough about that. I definitely recommend TreeSize Pro. I use it, love it, it's great. And it works on servers, it works on PCs, it's incredibly cost-effective as well, so I would suggest you just get it. On to this topic of privacy, you know, we started off talking about the whole credit report stuff and personally identifiable information, and I'm going to shift here into this topic of privacy from the perspective of eavesdropping, tracking, and the legalities surrounding that. So law enforcement has actually been using OnStar, SiriusXM radio, and other technologies to not only remotely listen, but so this is called eavesdropping, but then to track car locations for the last 15 years. Whether or not this has been legal, they've been doing it. And I'm posting an article from TechDirt, which is quite good. It refers to scenarios where just because the car had SiriusXM radio in it or the car had OnStar, even in the circumstance where the people were not subscribing to the service, law enforcement literally remotely activated this service and then used it to eavesdrop on people and track their locations. So, you know, if you're not comfortable with that, then either you have to buy vehicles that don't have this junk in it, or you have to somehow go through a process of disabling that junk. And, you know, people say, oh, well, I have, you know, Fifth Amendment, Fourth Amendment protections. Well, there's a problem with that, which is that there's a thing called the third party doctrine, which I've posted a link to that as well that you can read about. And what it ultimately comes down to is the Supreme Court has said that things, when you subscribe to something like SiriusXM or you subscribe to a cell phone service, that theoretically you know that these services are going to track you because that's part of the end user licensing agreement. So what they're saying with third-party doctrine is that you chose to subscribe to these services and you knew because of the end-user license agreement that you accepted, you knew that this data about you and your location and your usage and your habits and times and all of this would be recorded by the third-party service provider, such as your cell phone company or OnStar or Sirius, you know, things like this. And that the government then says that that is not covered by Fourth Amendment protections, which means they don't need a warrant to obtain that data about you because you knew it was going to be collected and you knew and you agreed to that because you accepted the terms of service. So many federal judges have said there's no expectation of privacy in cellular site location information and, you know, time, etc., because supposedly everybody knows that phones generate this data. So I think it's just important for you to be aware of this, that that is the law. And if you don't agree with that, then you have to take an approach like Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone just turns off his phone when he doesn't need it. And, you know, he's been very public about this, saying, you know, I don't want to be tracked. So when I'm not using my phone, I just turn it off. There it is. And you do need to be aware that if somebody has actually hacked your phone, they can hot mic it, which means that it can be literally recording all your conversations and everything that's going on around you, even when you're not using the phone. And they can also turn the phone on even when you have it turned off. So there's a thing called the Block It Pocket, which is like a little Faraday cage for your phone. You could use something like that. And a lot of phones nowadays, you can't take the battery out. So you can shut them off, but the battery really is quite inaccessible. So your option is really shut it off, but then you have to put it in something like a Blocket Pocket because that's like a little mini Faraday cage, and that is going to prevent signal from going in and out. Now, it is conceivable that the bad guys could have hijacked your phone or, the NSA, and hot mic'd it and then recording that stuff to local storage. So if you're really wanting to ensure that your conversations are not being recorded, then I would suggest shut the phone off and go put it someplace far away from you. Okay, there you have it. Really super important issue has been exposed about Netgear routers. They've been found to be extremely vulnerable to a privilege escalation exploit. Some really bad coding has been exposed in virtually every Netgear router out there, and this includes their wannabe business class equipment. And this can be used to turn your router into a botnet or just a device to steal your identity and your information. And what this ultimately comes down to is pretty much every Netgear router that's out there is vulnerable to this privilege escalation exploit unless, number one, Netgear has issued a brand new patch for it, and then two, you've applied the patch. So, if you do have a Netgear router, I strongly suggest that you go to Netgear's support website and download that and install it. But this is exactly why we at QPC have never found that Netgear routers, or frankly, any brand that makes any consumer equipment. So I'm talking about the Cisco Soho, Linksys, those sorts of things. We've never found that those types of devices are appropriate for any environment where you really want it to be secure, because of the fact that for the most part, those companies have only a 1 year life cycle of which they're actually going to support that device. And the other thing is, they're not intended to be security equipment. They're intended to be convenience equipment, which is what they're engineered for. So if they're engineered to be convenient and user friendly, as opposed to be security appliances, well, then you know what the entire focus was of the software development process that went into that appliance. And so, accept that reality and say, okay, well, if I really want to have security, then I need to use something like a WatchGuard Firebox, which WatchGuard Fireboxes, to my knowledge, and I've been working with them for over 16 years now, to my knowledge, have never been vulnerable to a WAN side privilege escalation attack or even a local side privilege escalation attack. When they were even moderately appropriately configured. So, I mean, that means that you'd have to do something other than just default install. So, if you just simply change the default passwords on the device, which everybody should be doing anyways, you should always change the default passwords on any device, then a WatchGuard Firebox is never going to be vulnerable to these sorts of issues. All right, well, that's it for today's show. And next week, I'll be talking to you about USB flash drives, and Google Apps for School.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.